the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, 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 it's the Tarncast, Tarncast, this is the Tarncast, Tarncast, the Tarncast, the Tarncast.
What's up, everybody? This is Todd Anderson. I'm the very special guest on today's episode of the Tarncast. I have no host, so it'll be just me talking, you know, one of my solo episodes that play like elongated versions of the opening of Mark Maron's WTF, accepting that a lot fewer people give a crap about me than they do about Mark Maron. I'm not bitter about that. I'm really happy for Mark Maron. I'm glad the podcasting world has sort of jettisoned him into a further career and a TV show and all that. I think that's great. So I don't want you to think that I'm bitter that that hasn't happened for me in the podcast. No, I'm just glad that there are four or five of you who might download this and listen to the first 5 minutes. Full disclosure, I already recorded 10 minutes of this and realized I had the wrong setting on the microphone, so I've gone back and I'm doing it again. So if it has a rehearsed quality, I apologize, because usually these are improv-y talks. But as it turns out, I screwed up, and now I have to start all over again. And it was gold. It was comic gold, and it's never as good. It's never as good when you're doing an off-the-cuff thing when suddenly you're redoing the whole thing. So there are some things that I would like to talk about. First and foremost, I want to talk about the reaction to me occasionally being sentimental. And it's weird how it affects people. And I think in a lot of cases, people are like, oh, that's really nice. I did this Facebook post last week or the week. Yeah, last week. I did this Facebook post because my son didn't have school, so I had to drag him around to auditions. And I had this theatrical audition for a TV series. It was a very small part, just two scenes with a couple lines in each scene. But it had a little bit of promise because, you know, it's a procedural show, it was a potential recurring role. So I could have conceivably become, you know, like on CSI, you have those cops that, you know, recur and they show up here and there and you see them and you go, oh, wow. That guy is on the show a lot, but he's not a series regular. That could have been the gig, which would have been good, because having a regular gig is always a good thing, even if it's, you know, a smaller recurring part, you know, not big checks. At least it's nice to know that you have a place to go and checks will come. I was kind of nervous about it, not because of that, but more because I would have been working with Terry O'Quinn in both scenes, and I really admire him as an actor. I think he's fantastic. So that was, you know, sort of an exciting thing. And also, you know, I had my kid, and he comes into the room, has to come into the room with me because he's little. I can't leave him outside unattended. That seems wrong. And so he comes into the room and he watches me audition. And that can be kind of weird, you know, and it makes the casting directors uncomfortable, but these women were very, very cool about it and, understanding and all that. And they were nice. They were really nice. Although when I walked in, one of them held a piece of paper in front of her face and whispered something to her associate. And that filled me with insecurity. I'm not sure. That's why it fills me with fucking insecurity. But I'm not sure. She probably was saying something really nice or sweet, or saying, you know, I look like Tom Hanks or something about this guy, or, you know, maybe she was saying, this is the guy I told you about who I saw online in a video and now I really want to fuck him. I don't know. She could have said that. Probably not. It was probably something positive, or maybe something unrelated to me at all. It probably wasn't anything catty or negative. But when a woman holds up a piece of paper and whispers something to another woman while I'm standing in front of them waiting to audition, I get fucking insecure. So I don't know. Anyway, that's not the point. So I did the audition, and the choices I made, you know, initially weren't what they wanted. And I was sort of thinking in my head, I'm going in with Terry O'Quinn, and I'm younger than he is, and us next to each other, I'm going to look kind of, you know, boyish, and you know, he's like a real man, and I'm a ninny, like a Nancy boy. Not that there's anything wrong with Nancy boys. I'm not passing judgment, but I'm my wife calls me a Nancy boy a lot. I don't know. Should I feel bad about that? I don't know. It, you know, in any event, this is the point I'm trying to, this is the point I'm trying to get at. So I was very insecure about it, but they got me to the place where I wanted to be. So instead of like sort of being timid around the Terry O'Quinn character, I was more, you know, on his level as far as authoritarian wise. And you know, they didn't call me and I didn't get the part. So I'm probably right in that my look was too young for what they wanted, if that was the relationship they wanted. But I certainly could have acted it, but it would have looked strange. I mean, it would have looked strange to have me and Terry O'Quinn be complete equals and him not being a little wary about my greenness just because, I'm 41, but I could probably pass for 36, I'm guessing, and he looks older than that. So he probably would have, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I think I made the right choices initially for our looks because I didn't have a script, you know, so I don't really know what the hell's going on in the thing. So so I was very insecure about the whole thing for all those reasons. And so when on the way out, you know, my son and I, who's 7 going on 8, and we're walking through the Fox lot together after the audition and talking. And I said, "Hey, buddy, how did I look in there?" And he was like, "I thought you were great." And he's like, "But if you need something more specific than that," and I said, "Specific." And he said, specific than that. You need to ask somebody else because, hey, I'm your son. Yeah, I always think you're good. And I was like, thank you very much, buddy. I get that. I just was wondering if I seemed nervous or anything. And he said, "No, you didn't seem nervous. Do you actually get nervous?" He was surprised. You know, they get nervous. And I said, "Yeah, I get nervous sometimes." And he said, "Oh, well, Dad, I thought you were great." And I posted that little story on Facebook, basically wrapping it up by saying, "Hey, you know, so what? If nobody else likes me, my kid likes me." And, you know, that's sort of like, in an awful way, that's like John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. My wife likes me. So who cares if nobody else likes me? Of course, his wife is dead, as it turns out. It's really sad. And now I've depressed myself. I got to remember to watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles this Thanksgiving. I really like that movie. Anyway, the point is I posted that, and this friend of mine, Jason, who I do a podcast with, we were actually supposed to podcast today, and I'm doing this in lieu of it because we didn't have time to get together because it's my fault. Not really my fault. It's just the world happened, and I have all this crap that I have to do, so I can't sit down with him and talk for 2 hours on mic. I only have, you know, about 20 minutes, half hour today to do it. So this is it. This is all you get. People who listen to me podcast, are there people who listen to my? No, the answer is no. I live in a world of fucking delusion. I am deluded and believe that if I keep trying, that eventually this stuff is gonna matter. But I know in my heart of hearts that I'm going to die anonymous and left out. No, that's not true. I'm just kidding. I'm on the positive tip. Here's what I'm talking about. Because you know, I make self-deprecating dark jokes a lot because it's funny. It helps to get it out. It's gallows humor, you guys. But this guy Jason, who, you know, I love the guy, but he's very critical. He's a little bit of a misanthrope in certain ways, you know. Like the other day, he called and left a message on my voicemail, and before he got to the fucking reason he was leaving a voicemail, he had to go on a tirade of my outgoing message, and he compared it to like guys who, like, when you call, they go, "Hello? Hello?" I'm just kidding. This isn't, I'm not even here. This is just outgoing voicemail. He compared it to that hack shit. So, and just like that, you know, I guess he's in the Dennis Miller camp of voicemail messages, because Dennis Miller had that bit about how, you know, people who leave funny voicemail messages, that they're like frustrated artists and it's their only creative outlet. So, you know, I feel like Jason's firmly aligned himself with Dennis Miller at this point, which makes him a little bit of a douchebag, because let's be honest. I mean, Dennis Miller hasn't been funny since 9/11 happened. But you know, whatever, that's his thing, and it's funny. He gets pissy and critical, and it's funny, and I enjoy it, and I laughed very hard. It is like horribly passionate anger about my outgoing message, but you know, whatever, whatever's clever, whatever you like. But then, like, on Facebook, he said, you know, when traditional, he called me a traditional cynic. When traditional cynics get sentimental on Facebook, I expect, things to go bad and I start hiding the knives, is basically. So he's suggesting that I'm bipolar and a good mood swing will eventually be followed by a horribly angry, sad mood swing that will end in violence. Because in addition to being bipolar, I'm also a sociopath, according to Jason. Jason's wrong. I'm not a cynic. I say dark things, but, you know, but let's be honest, being negative and critical is always funnier than being happy and glad about crap. It's got to come from, I mean, and sometimes, you know, it's funny to sound positive and happy about something that's negative, but that's therein that lies the joke, the negativity. That's what comedy exists. It's a way of releasing stress from the shit that happens in life. If life was all grand and happy all the time, there would be no goddamn reason for anyone to have a sense of humor, because we all live in a fucking paradise. So let's just have a happy orgy and not deal. We don't have to make jokes, because there's no tension to release. But that's my theory about comedy anyway. I don't know. I mean, but if you look at kids, I mean, kids are very positive in general, and excited, and they're looking at the adventure in life. But you look at the things that they respond to comedically, and they're about the things in their life that cause them stress. That's what makes them laugh. That's what makes you laugh. Shit that gives you stress, someone points it out, you agree, you laugh, and everyone feels better about the shit that gave you stress. You know what I mean? That's what comedy is for. So, yeah, comedy, like, comes often from negative and stressful places, and there's nothing, goddamn nothing wrong with it. But when you're supposed, because, you know, I have a reputation for being cynical, I guess, and I really don't consider it cynicism. I mean, to me, cynicism, I mean, I am not an apathetic human being. All right. And if you're truly cynical, even if you start out not being apathetic, if you're truly cynical, it's going to lead to apathy. You're going to give up if you're truly cynical. Someone who makes cynical jokes. Yeah, sure. Someone who makes cynical jokes, maybe, you know, will get a reputation for being a cynic, but that's not really true. Just the very fact that someone's willing to make jokes means they're not net negative. Okay? Because they're making jokes, and jokes are a positive thing no matter which way you cut it. All right? Real jokes, funny jokes. I don't mean like racist jokes, because are they funny? No, not really, unless you're a terrible racist. And they're not even funny then. You're laughing to support hatred, and it's not real, genuine laughter. We know what real, genuine laughter is. I mean, come on. Some people don't, because some people really don't have a sense of humor. They hear other people laugh and they imitate it. I'm getting off topic here. The point is whenever I post something sentimental, people freak out. And it doesn't mean that I'm changing, and it doesn't mean that I've gone off the deep end. It just means that I have the ability to see things in life that are wonderful. And, you know, quite frankly, lately, despite how disappointing it may be for some people to hassle with me being sentimental about things, because then also, you know, over the weekend, I was out of town in San Francisco shooting a commercial thing, and I just posted, you know, that I was barely out of town and I missed my family in Los Angeles and my friends and all that stuff. And it's true, when especially because it was over the weekend, when my weekends get taken away from me, and I'm not complaining because it's good to get work, but you know, my family are regular, they have regular job and regular school, and they have Saturday and Sunday off, and when I don't get to spend the time with them, and then my friends who also have like regular jobs and they have their weekends off and I don't get to spend time with them, I feel like a loss, and I miss them. And I just posted that, and that made people even more weird, because it's like, what's going on with Todd? You know, one guy said, it sounds like you're really happy. And the truth is, I am trying to focus on positive things from here on out. I don't want to dwell on the negativity. And the truth is where I am in my career, which has been basically the same place for 15 goddamn years. And it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. And I contend to sort of focus on that. I don't believe in magical thinking. I don't believe that by focusing on my friends and family and those good things that are in my life, and the things that I enjoy outside of work are gonna suddenly make all my dreams come true. It's just like I'm tired of being frustrated, and as far as I can tell, those things aren't gonna change, because I still have to drive around town if I want to get jobs and audition for bit parts in commercials and TV shows, even ones where I know the producer. Let's say the writer producer, I still have to audition for under 5 parts, and at the same time, I audition for series regular roles, big roles, little roles. I'm not like, you know, and some people say that if you can go out for those little roles and all that stuff, and it sends like a weird thing that you're backtracking on your career. I mean, if it's a friend of mine, I'm going to go out for it because I want to work with my friends. And I don't have the name recognition for who, you know, the money people to go, oh yeah, you can just hire him. You don't, I still have to go in and prove myself all the time. And, after, you know, more than 15 years in the business now, that can be very frustrating if I dwell on that, but I am pointedly not dwelling on that because I don't want to live my life all according to frustration. All right. So I've shifted my focus, and that's for me. It's a selfish thing that I'm doing for me. I'm shifting my focus, and I'm focusing on the good stuff. I'm focusing, you talk about Jason, who's you know, shitting on my voicemail and my sentimentality, but I am focused on having friendships, good friendships with dudes like that. Jason's a great guy. He's very smart. He's very funny. I love hanging out with him. And I love his negativity. I love criticism, his brutality in his criticism of the world at large. I love it. I love the honesty. But I'm focusing on the love there, not necessarily on what he's knocking down. And I don't disagree with him on what he's knocking down. And I'm not going to stop knocking stuff down and being critical and being honest about my feelings about things. But I'm letting it go. I'm saying that can go ahead and suck, and my career can go ahead and still be frustrating. I don't give a shit, because I'm focused on family, friends, good stuff. That's what I'm focusing on. Okay. And I don't think that there's, I'm shifting my perspective, and I'm not doing it because I've suddenly, you know, subscribed to magical thinking or something like that, and I think it's going to change my life in any. It probably won't. I'm going to probably continue living paycheck to paycheck and driving around town and trying to get jobs. But you know what? I'm going to be happy anyway. All right, because that's what it comes down to. You have a choice. And another friend of mine always says that you're either a sad person or you're a happy person, no matter what situation you're in. And you can have all the success in the world, and you'll still, if misery is at your core. I'm not saying that, like, maybe I'm genetically predisposed to be frustrated and aggravated and all those things. But what I'm trying, it's a grand experiment, is just to acknowledge the frustration and the sadness and to be there with it when it happens, but to just let it go by the end of the day and focus on something like my wife. My wife is beautiful and I love her I want her and I need her and those things are all great. And why shouldn't I, when I see her at the end of the day, you know, and we talk about our days and we'll talk about the frustrations we had in the day, but why shouldn't I be happy just in the moment that I see her, or in even in the moment that I think about her after I have a bad audition or somebody shits on me or whatever, why not think about her or my son or my friends, you know, why not think about them and the laughter that we share and all that and be happy? You know what? So what if that sucked? I still have this. I still have friends, and some of my friends are having grand success. And why can't I just be happy that they're having grand success? And I'll just keep doing what I do, and the world can accept me on a larger level. And I go in and out of this all the time. I get away from it, and I get frustrated that I do all these things and I'm not more widely loved. But there are people who love me, and there are people, yeah, and I mean, you know, professionally too, there are people who love what I do and the performances I do. I may not have the kind of massive audience that's going to get me a production value on a web series or something like that, but from YouTube, because, you know, YouTube invests in web series if you have like a lot of subscribers on YouTube, and I have like 8. So that's not going to get, that's not going to work out for me, but the right now, but there's no saying that suddenly, you know, maybe something will happen and boom, even at 41 years of age, suddenly boom, all my dreams come true, you know, cause it's like Willy Wonka said, be careful, Charlie, cause you know what happened to the boy who got everything he ever wanted. He lived happily ever after. And while I have not gotten everything I've wanted, I have gotten a lot of what I wanted. And I am going to go ahead and find my little ways of living happily ever after every once in a while. Even if it's just for one fleeting moment a day. The one fleeting moment a day where I sit down with my family and we watch an episode of Star Trek, or we're just talking about our days over dinner. I'm going to take those moments and I'm going to make those my happily ever afters. It's only every once in a while, might be only once a day for a few minutes, but I'm in those few minutes, I want to live happily ever after, because you know what? The world's not fucking giving it to me. And the world doesn't owe it to me. And that's the thing, but I owe it to myself, because I do a lot of fun stuff and I do a lot of good stuff. And I on some level here and there enhance the lives of others. I make things fun maybe where there wasn't, and while I don't have the money or the time to like do charity work, and maybe one day I will, I would like to, I for now I do little things, you know, even if it's just holding the door for somebody, you know, waiting an extra 30 seconds holding the door for somebody, not just women, men too, everybody, just holding a door for somebody, like those things. Or when I'm in an audition, like giving to the other actor as much as I can to help them look good, or you know, just helping out friends wherever I can, and making new friends wherever I can. I don't know that that's the point. And it's a struggle. It's a struggle sometimes to smile and laugh and be happy. But I want to find it. That's what I'm saying. My happily ever after every once in a while. I want to find it on a daily basis. And it's okay. It's okay if that freaks people out. I think they'll come around to me and accept me, because I'm a weird dude. I People think one thing will happen and then I do the other. I am an enigma. I can't figure myself out half the time. And it freaks out when I do things that are out of the norm from whatever. Like, it's funny, I have so many different sets of friends and they see different aspects of me socially. I don't know, because I'm a performer, I guess I'll play to my audience. So if my audience is an embittered one, I'll go with that. And if they're a happier one, I'll go with that. And it's not because I want to be liked, it's because I want other people to feel comfortable. And I think there's nothing wrong with being cranky and negative. I will hang with those. If that's what you are, if that's where you are, that's where you're comfortable. That, in a weird way, is kind of your happiness. I mean, clinical depression is another thing. But, you know, somebody who feels good sitting and railing on the world. Hey, you know, I'm all for that. Let's do it. Let's get real. Let's get ugly sometimes. But if I'm with people who like to just hang on the positive tip and be chill and, you know, whatever. And also, I think, you know, if you're with a bunch of people and you sit around and cry together about, you know, the stuff in this world that's shitty, I think that's good. I think that's good. I'll sit and cry with people. I'll do whatever. But the point is me selfishly right now, that's one of the things I'm working on. I'm working on me finding that little daily dose of, you know what, I get to be happy. Doesn't matter if I'm broke. Doesn't matter if nobody wants me in their TV shows. I can still be happy because I got what I got because of me. And there's a lot to it. I got the wealth of friendships and family. And if the money people don't want to give me their money, I mean, you know, what am I struggling for anyway? The only reason anyone ever wants lots of money is so they can have sex. And the reason why your body is predisposed to have sex is so you can have a family. I already get to have sex in a family. I don't need lots of money for that. So I'm already existing in why people get obsessed with money. But at the same time, I'd really like a shitload of money. So, send me some goddamn money. Just give me money. Toncast.